It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Shannon Bream. Emergency crews working around the clock following the deadly bridge collapse in Baltimore Harbor. How long will it take to get one of the country's busiest ports back online?
We have a very long road ahead of us.
And we're going to rebuild that port together.
The White House vows unlimited support for reconstruction efforts. Maryland Governor Wes Moore on the massive work ahead to get the port back in business. Then tensions deepen between the U.S. and Israel over the war in Gaza. As a ceasefire resolution passes the United Nations with the U.S. refusing to veto. We'll speak with GOP Senator Rick Scott of Florida, fresh off his visit to Israel, and California Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna. Plus, a New York judge issues a gag order against President Trump in the Stormy Daniels hush money case. While across the country in Los Angeles, lawyers for the president's son back in court, arguing the tax charges against Hunter are politically motivated and should be tossed. Our legal panel breaks it down. And our Sunday panel on brand new Fox polls showing just how voters feel about the economy and how it's affecting their choice for the White House come November. All right now on Fox News Sunday.
Hello from Fox News in Washington. Happy Easter to the millions who are celebrating today. We begin with headlines from the early investigation into what led to a massive container ship in Baltimore Harbor slamming into the Francis Scott Key Bridge early Tuesday morning, leading to its collapse and the deaths of 6 people. Minutes before the ship was set to go under the bridge, the ship's alarms rang out. The lights went out, the engine stopped, and the rudder froze. One of the first places investigators are examining on board is the electrical generators that power nearly every system, and whether the fuel used to run them may have been contaminated. Back in August, 32 vessels from Texas to Singapore reported contaminated fuel, with some of them reporting loss of power and movement at sea. In a moment, our interview with Maryland Governor Wes Moore. But first, we turn to Madeline Rivera near the wreckage of the bridge in Baltimore's Harbor. Hello, Madeline.
Good morning, Shannon. Demolition crews here are facing a dangerous and daunting task. At the moment, they're focusing on the north side of the bridge behind me. They are cutting up pieces of metal and lifting them off site. They want to open up a channel to allow some small vessels to pass through. This 24/7 operation requiring extensive engineering analysis to make sure the work is done as safely and as quickly as possible. Several cranes have been dispatched, including the Chesapeake 1000, capable of lifting 1,000 tons. State officials have not given an estimate as to how long it'll take to clear up the debris, recover the 4 remaining missing people, reopen the port, and remove the ship, but they understand the pressure, with 8,000 workers on the docks impacted and millions of dollars worth of goods incapable of transiting. President Biden is expected to visit Baltimore next week. Shannon.
Madeline, thank you so much. Now to our interview with the governor, Democratic Governor Wes Moore. Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday. We know this is an exceptionally trying time for you, for the people of Baltimore, of Maryland more broadly. Can you tell us anything about where we are in recovering those who are still missing and investigating what happened? I mean, the president has talked about the need for emergency federal money to flow in there, but do you assess that eventually others may be held accountable and also contribute to what's going to be a massive rebuild?
Yeah, our prayers continue to go out to these families who are just living a nightmare right now. And also our prayers going out to these first responders who have been working 24/7 to try to make sure that we're both giving the closure to the families that they need and that they deserve, and also making sure that we can continue to open up this channel. And so the thing that we know is there will be an ongoing investigation. There needs to be an ongoing investigation as to what happened. I want that investigation to be speedy, and for anyone who needs to be held accountable to be held accountable. And at the same time, we have got to get this channel opened. We have got to get commerce flowing again, and we have got to rebuild the Francis Scott Key Bridge.
Yeah, just a couple of notes here on the data about what happens at that port. Axios says the port supports more than 15,000 direct jobs, more than 139,000 indirect jobs, generating about $3.3 billion in total personal income. There's a massive impact on your community there.
It is, but it's, you know, and it's not just a massive impact on Maryland. This is a massive impact on the national economy. We're talking about, one of the busiest ports inside the entire country, a port that handles more cars, more heavy trucks, more agricultural equipment than any other port inside this country. So this is not just impacting Maryland. This is impacting the farmer in Kentucky. It's impacting the auto dealer in Ohio. It's impacting the restaurant in Louisiana. And in Tennessee, this is impacting the entire country. And so it really does become a national imperative that we can get the Port of Baltimore up and going again. And the support that we're seeing, it's not because anyone's trying to do Maryland a favor. It's because the national economy relies on the Port of Baltimore being up and running.
Yeah, and sort of a two-part question here. Getting the port open and running, at least operational at some point, any idea on a timeline for that? And then much more long-term for getting the bridge rebuilt.
It is, but the whole operation is a remarkably complex operation, and this is pretty unprecedented. Different than what we saw from Tampa, different than what we saw from Minneapolis and their bridge collapse, because in this situation we have a vessel that is nearly the size of the Eiffel Tower. That is now stuck because the key bridge, which is 3,000 to 4,000 tons of steel, is sitting on top of it. Inside the water, you have debris. Inside the water, you have wreckage, and you have a channel that is just clogged because the ship is still sitting there. So this is a remarkably complex operation. We know this is going to be a long road to recovery, but we know that we have to move with safety and we have to move with speed in order to get our commercial engine going again.
Well, Governor, I'm glad you mentioned the first responders, too. We know people around the clock, since this happened in the middle of the night, have been working there. They are brave souls, and we are indebted to them and to you and others who are working to right this situation. Governor, thank you.
Thank you, and God bless you, and happy Easter.
You too. Joining us now, GOP Senator Rick Scott of Florida. Senator Scott, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Well, happy Easter. It's a special day for Christians.
It absolutely is. And we, by the way, just have a statement from the White House on that. We're going to get to that a little bit later in the show. There's been some controversy, you may have heard. But I want to start here with the bridge and us just talking with Governor Moore. There is talk that some of this will have to come through a funding package in Congress, where you guys are fighting over a lot of things. Do you see that moving?
Well, first off, my heart goes out to everybody that lost their life. And I hope they found the bodies. I feel sorry for those families, and I know it's going to take a lot of work. Look, this should be an issue that we all come together. Unfortunately, the Biden administration has played politics. I still have Florida farmers from a hurricane a year and a half ago that still aren't getting relief. So the federal government is a partner. The federal government needs to be a partner, but we need to stop playing politics, and that's exactly what the Biden administration has done.
Well, let's talk about, speaking of politics, you're fresh back from a trip to Israel. The Biden administration has both publicly and privately created some distance when it comes to how it feels about the current administration there in Israel. And the vice president just days ago was asked about consequences if Israel moves into Rafah with this planned ground invasion. Here's what she said.
Are you ruling out that there would be consequences from the United States?
I am ruling out nothing.
What do you think those consequences are, and how is that public talk, that position, going over with Israeli leaders?
It's not going over well. I met with Prime Minister Netanyahu and the foreign minister, the defense minister. They know that they have to go into Rafah to destroy Hamas. They have to destroy Hamas. They need American support, but they're going to go into Rafah to get rid of Hamas, whether the U.S. supports them or not. I don't understand it. We still have American hostages. I met with families of American hostage families while I was over there. I went to one of the kibbutz I'd been to in 2019, where over 60 Jews were killed just because they're Jews. Kids, people are raped. They're just shot at point blank. They were burned alive. I went to a music festival where 363 people were killed just because they were Jews. There's over 40 hostages. I met with IDF soldiers. They need American support. Here's my takeaway. Number one. They need and deserve American support. They have to go into Rafah to destroy Hamas. Number two, Qatar needs to get the hostages out. They need to be held accountable for doing that. Number three, Iran needs to be held accountable. All right. And then we all have to do everything we can to support them. So I'm going to work hard to get these hostages home. I think the Biden administration, Democrats need to change their tune. They vote against Israel aid. They didn't see America didn't even stand up for Israel at the UN with the UN resolution. I mean, this is disgusting what the Biden administration is doing. Support Israel. They've got to kill Hamas. They'll never get their country back.
At the same time, there are numerous reports out there that billions more in weapons, bombs, fighter jets are flowing to Israel from the Biden administration. So is this a matter of, in your estimation, publicly talking tough, but privately the U.S. is getting Israel what it needs? And that's despite pressure from the left.
Well, there's going to be... This is a long fight. There's going to be a time where they're going to need more weapons. There's been prior weapons packages that has given Israel aid, but there's going to need to be more aid given to be able to destroy Hamas. And by the way, we've got to focus on destroying Hamas, and we've also got to focus on what are we doing to get these hostages out? Why isn't the Biden administration doing anything to hold Qatar accountable for what's going on over here?
Well, and to that point, I want to read this. It's from Richard Goldberg, who's an advisor at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, a former Trump administration security official. He says there's long been a need for a moment of choosing where the Qataris have to decide that they are a U.S. ally and not the modern-day Swiss banker to the Nazis who are going to play all sides, take from the U.S. strategic and economic benefits, and then provide strategic and economic benefits to the enemies of the United States at the same time. What more do you think this administration should or could be doing with regard to Qatar?
Well, they need to put everything on the table. Why do we have a military base in Qatar when they're hosting the leaders of Hamas? Right. And, they could by themselves. Qatar right now could tell Hamas you will be leaving the country. All right. Unless these hostages are released today. And guess what? Those hostages would be released today. Qatar doesn't want to do that. They don't want to lose their military base. I don't get it. How do you have a military base in the same place where your enemy is being hosted by the government? How can we do that? I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. And they're holding American hostages. I want the Biden administration to start talking about the fact we have American families been held hostage in Gaza by Hamas, and we have Israeli families. What is Biden doing to get those out? Stop talking about stop criticizing the Netanyahu administration. By the way, has Biden won a war? Has Biden fought in a war? No. What's his background in doing this? How does he know better how to go into Rafah and get rid of Hamas? He doesn't. Makes you mad when you hear this stuff.
I want to really quickly ask you about the pier that has been proposed to set up and bring in humanitarian aid into Gaza. U.S. troops supposed to help set that up, run that operation, but not set foot. Into Gaza. The IDF apparently is going to expend their resources to create a security bubble there. But there are people on both sides of the aisle here in D.C. that are growing increasingly worried that U.S. troops are going to be endangered by that operation or be pulled into something more broadly. What's your take?
Well, first of all, IDF is doing everything they can to protect civilians. Who's not is Hamas. So I do not want American soldiers at risk. All right. In Gaza. That's not fair to American soldiers. We've asked, we have a letter to the White House asking, tell us what your plan is to make sure Americans, men and women are not put at risk. We watched what happened with Afghanistan with the withdrawal where we lost 13 servicemen and women. This administration doesn't seem to need to have a plan for anything because it doesn't. We haven't heard what their plan is to do this. But I know that Netanyahu, the leadership in Israel, the IDF is doing everything they can to protect civilians, and who's not is Hamas.
Senator Scott, thank you for sharing your insights after just getting back from that trip. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Shannon. Happy Easter.
And to you. Joining us now, California Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna. Congressman Khanna, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Thank you, Shannon. Happy Easter to everyone.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's start with polling on foreign policy, where we're having this discussion about Israel, among other things. Brand new poll out this week shows that when people are asked about foreign policy, they give an 11-point edge to President Trump over President Biden. And specifically, when we asked about Israel and Hamas a few weeks ago, there was a 65% disapproval rating for President Biden. What do you make of that? Americans don't think he's managing this well.
I think people realize that there's a crisis. They see images of people dying, and they want the war to end. They want Israel to be secure, but they also want Palestinian lives not to be lost. And I think once the war comes to an end under the president's leadership, his numbers will improve, just like his numbers have bounced back on the economy. And in the Bloomberg poll, he's closed the gap in a lot of the swing states.
Okay, we'll talk about the economy in just a second, but I want to talk about this UN Security Council resolution this week. We did not act to veto it or to stop it. That didn't go over well with a lot of folks. Here is former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on how that's playing worldwide.
Not only will Hamas be happy with the abstention, the Iranian terrorists will be happy. The folks who underwrote, trained the people who committed the barbarities of October 7th, the Russians will be happy. The Chinese Communist Party will be happy. And all our friends around the world will see that an ally walked away from its friends in its time of struggle.
Is that a message we want to be sending?
I respectfully just disagree with Secretary Pompeo. Look, you have 14 countries in the world in the Security Council that have been calling for a ceasefire and the immediate release of all hostages. We've been the only country in the past that was vetoing it. It actually was hurting our ability to build the multilateral coalitions we need to stand up to Putin, to stand up to Xi Jinping, because we were isolating ourselves from allies we need. And it's a philosophical difference. Pompeo believes that America can go it alone. President Biden believes in building alliances to stand up to Putin and Xi Jinping.
Okay, my understanding on this latest resolution is that it was calling for an immediate ceasefire, but not conditioned on getting the hostages out immediately. And I know that those are ongoing conversations. We think they're continuing in Cairo over the next few days, too. You mentioned the economy, so we've got pulling on that as well. New data showing that when people are asked, are you better off financially than you were 4 years ago? A majority, 52%, say they are worse off. 26% say about the same. But only one in five think they're better off now than they were under President Trump. That includes 86% of independents who report that they think the economy is negative and you need them to win in the fall.
Well, look, this country went through COVID, and I think that had a huge, huge impact, and we're still recovering from it. But the question is, what is the choice? Here's what President Biden wants to do. He's created 15 million new jobs. He wants to bring back manufacturing. He wants to raise wages for folks. He wants to lower the cost of prescription drugs. President Trump had 4 years. What did he do? He had corporate tax cuts. Many people benefited from it in Silicon Valley, in my district. And the question is, where do you think the economic vision of this country should go? I believe invest in the working and middle class. There's no doubt people are hurting because we're still recovering from the from COVID. But President Biden has a better economic vision.
Well, why do the polls say the opposite? Why do more people give the edge to former President Trump, say they were doing better under him, and they prefer him to handle things like the economy and inflation?
I think many people think 4 years ago was prior to COVID, and COVID really hurt folks. I mean, we had a huge increase in unemployment. We had a lot of supply chains get interrupted. But President Biden has steered us out of that low point. And he has done it by investing in infrastructure, by creating 15 million new jobs, lowering prescription drug costs, building infrastructure. And the point, though, is elections are about the future. I mean, what is President Trump's economic agenda? As I understand it, it is massive tax cuts for the very wealthy. President Biden's economic agenda is a raise for the working class. And I think people will see that President Biden's policies will be better.
Well, they had the optics this week in New York of two events, a huge fundraiser with former President Obama and Clinton. A lot of star-studded folks at Radio City Music Hall raised more than $26 million. It's what campaigns have to do these days. But across town, President Trump was at the wake for a fallen NYPD soldier. Now, somebody who's not a fan of President Trump, Bill Kristol, tweeted about it. He said, an unfortunate day politically for the Democrats. Biden does a fancy NYC fundraiser in the midst of chaotic left-wing street protests. Looks like limousine liberalism plus the breakdown of law and order. Trump attends the wake of the slain NYPD police officer on Long Island. David Axelrod, a longtime strategist and Democratic official, says not wrong. He agrees the optics of that were tough. Do you think that President Biden should have made time for both events?
Well, my heart goes out to the slain police officer's family and his sacrifice for the community and the country. And I don't want to in any way diminish that. I think President Biden's event with President Clinton and President Obama was about unifying the Democratic Party, showing that this Democratic Party is going to be energized and inspired and is going to be prepared to win in 2024. But of course, the president should convey his condolences to that family, and I'm sure he will.
And Congressman Connor, very quickly before we go, the House will be back soon, and the Speaker is under threat of a vote to vacate the chair. Would you join other Democrats in saving him or allow it to fall apart?
I would consider it under two conditions. One, we get the aid into Ukraine so we stand up to Putin. And two, let's get the $600 million to rebuild the bridge in Baltimore. I mean, I read somewhere it's going to take 3 years, 4 years. China would do it in 3 months. Let's get the steel. Let's get the permitting. Let's get the funding. Let's show that America can still do things, big things, when there's a crisis. And let's have a timeline of 6 months to do it. So if Speaker Johnson does Ukraine funding and the bridge, then I'm open to it.
I would suspect other Democrats may join you. Okay, Congressman, thank you very much for your time. I'm always good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, coming up, major legal cases with a direct impact on campaign 24 involving former President Trump and Hunter Biden. Our legal panel joins us to talk about who had the tougher week in court and what comes next.
I brought in Ensure Max Protein with
the Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Legal news dominated the headlines this week, from the Supreme Court hearing arguments on a case involving access to abortion pills, to new developments in former President Trump's Stormy Daniels hush money trial in New York, and election interference case in Georgia, plus Hunter Biden, his tax case in California, and an invitation from Congress for his father, the president, to appear before a House impeachment inquiry. Here to help us break it down, Lucas Tomlinson, live from the White House. Hey, Lucas.
Good morning, Shannon, and happy Easter. While President Biden and his family repaired to Camp David this Easter weekend, the former president, Donald Trump, is preparing for his upcoming legal battles.
I don't know how you can have a trial like this in the middle of an election, a presidential election. And this is, again, this is a Biden trial.
The former president faces a number of court dates before Election Day. On April 15th, the Stormy Daniels hush money trial begins. The judge has issued a gag order to restrict Trump from making any statements about the former adult film star or anyone else involved with the case. Special counsel Jack Smith's classified documents trial faces a delay. The Supreme Court is also expected to make a decision in the coming weeks on whether or not Trump's immunity claim is valid. And last week, Trump's lawyers argued that Fulton County DA Fani Willis needs to dismiss her election interference case against the former president.
There is nothing alleged factually against President Trump that is not political speech. He's not being prosecuted for lying. He's being prosecuted for lying to the government.
In L.A., lawyers for Hunter Biden urged a federal judge last week to dismiss the 9 tax charges against him. A judge's decision is expected by April 17th. The case could go to trial in June.
House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer has invited President Biden to testify at his upcoming impeachment inquiry. A White House spokesman laughed off the invitation. Shannon?
Okay, Lucas Tomlinson live at the White House. Thank you. It is time for our legal panel. George Washington University law professor and Fox News contributor Jonathan Turley and former principal deputy assistant attorney general Tom Dupree. Always good to see both of you. Thank you for coming
in.
Thank you. Thanks, Shannon.
Okay, so let's start there with this invitation from House Oversight Chair James Comer to the president saying, I invite you to participate in a public hearing at which you will be afforded the opportunity to explain, under oath, your involvement with your family's sources of income and means it has used to generate it. Tom, the odds a president ever shows up to this invitation?
Zero. I don't have to go out too far out on a limb to answer this one, Shannon. Look, there's no way President Biden is ever going to come and testify publicly on these issues. That said, there is historic precedent. Presidents have come and testified before Congress. I don't think this president will do this. I certainly don't think this president will do this at this point in time. I think the question for the House Republicans at this point is, what do they do next? What is the next move? Are there more witnesses they can call? My guess is they ultimately will send a criminal referral to the Justice Department, which I will also predict Merrick Garland will put on the back burner and never get to.
You don't think there will be action on that? Okay, so to the point of whether the impeachment inquiry is winding down, what's happening there, Ian Sams over the White House said this in a posting to X. Comer knows 20-plus witnesses have testified that POTUS did nothing wrong. He knows that the hundreds of thousands of pages of records he's received have refuted his false allegations. This is a sad stunt at the end of a dead impeachment. Call it a day, pal.
Yeah, I thought it was quite shocking to see that level of taunting of the House. This is one of the most important things that the Congress and a president can be involved in, an impeachment inquiry. And actually, when I testified in the Biden impeachment hearing, I noted that Sams and others might be tripping some wires here. This is what got the Nixon White House in trouble, is when the White House counsel and other offices got involved in the narrative. There are serious questions here. There are 10 questions presented. He doesn't have to appear to answer them. But the president stands contradicted. I mean, he clearly lied when he said that he had no knowledge of his son's business dealings. He was also clearly aware of an influence peddling scheme, and he was the focus of it. And what the Democrats have done successfully is created this false narrative that he has to receive money directly for this to be corruption or bribery. Federal courts have rejected that. They've said repeatedly that money going to family members is corruption, can be crimes like bribery. But are they going to answer these questions? No. The president would rather drink molten lead than answer any one of these questions. Should he? Of course he should, because he stands contradicted, and the public has a right to know.
But I think all of us, if we were his attorneys, would tell him not to answer any of those questions. We probably agree on that. Meanwhile, his son is obviously facing tax and gun charges. He's got a lot on his legal plate as well. His team was in Los Angeles this week arguing that he is now being persecuted because of political aims. The LA Times reporting it this way. Biden's legal team contended that intense political pressure from Republican lawmakers and former President Trump had improperly influenced the case, led to the collapse of a plea deal for Biden, and prompted prosecutors to, quote, up the ante and secure far more serious indictments in both Delaware and Los Angeles. Tom Hunter's team says they're the victim of politics from the DOJ.
This is a totally ridiculous argument, Shannon. There's no way on earth that this federal judge is going to throw out these tax charges against Hunter Biden. Look, if anything, what we have learned from the testimony from the whistleblowers and others, that behind the scenes at the Justice Department, if anything, Hunter Biden was getting favored treatment, special treatment, not the reverse. I don't think there's any way that this judge buys Hunter Biden's arguments. I think it is likely the judge is going to allow this case to proceed. I think he's going to move quickly in scheduling a trial date, and I fully expect that we will see Hunter Biden stand trial in California on these tax charges this summer.
Wow. Okay, so he could be facing those two trials this summer at the same time we're doing conventions and campaigning and all that kind of stuff. But before that, we get to the hush money case in New York for former President Trump. There is a gag order now, and this is what the judge said in part, the AP reporting from his order. Given that the eve of trial is upon us, it is without question that the imminency of the risk of harm is now paramount. The judge wrote in a four-page decision granting the prosecution's request for what it deemed a narrowly tailored gag order. Jonathan, is it narrow? Will it survive?
It's not. I've been a critic of gag orders for decades because I believe that they do run afoul of free speech. But this is like nothing we've ever seen before. These prosecutors and judges waited. I mean, essentially, the prosecutors waited to bring these cases until shortly before the election. The judges are now pushing to have these trials run up to, even through the election. And then you impose a gag order. And it creates this perversity because you have people like Michael Cohen, who's going on the news every night attacking Trump, arguing against his election. Trump can't, under this gag order, criticize Michael Cohen or Stormy Daniels. He can't talk about the lead prosecutor who seems to have sort of bounced from case to case involving Trump. This election is going to turn in significant part on the weaponization of the legal system. And Trump is winning on that narrative. The majority of people do see political influence in these cases. So these judges are effectively gagging a presidential candidate on one of the chief issues in the presidential election. I think there's major constitutional problems with this.
Well, and it's similar to the argument we heard down in Georgia this week, where his attorney was arguing that what he was saying about the election and allegations of fraud, it was all political speech, and that those indictments should have never been brought. I mean, is this political speech argument going to work in any of these cases?
Well, I think the political speech argument has a lot of force. I mean, look, President Trump undeniably has a First Amendment right to speak about issues, particularly on issues concerning a presidential election where he's the leading candidate. He also has a constitutional right to defend himself. And I agree with Professor Turley that I think it is a very fine line for a judge to walk to try to fashion a gag order that passes constitutional scrutiny, because you have to give the former president the right to exercise his constitutional rights. At the same time, I get the point that the judge wants to run a tight ship. He doesn't want witnesses being threatened. He doesn't want his family being threatened. My guess is that he will probably draft an order that prevents those sorts of comments, but it's got to leave the president the right to exercise his First Amendment speech rights.
What if it lands at SCOTUS?
I think SCOTUS would look harshly at this order as it's currently written. Look, you're in for a penny or a pound. You want to try the leading presidential candidate right before the presidential election. You have to have some recognition that there's a political speech element here, which is paramount. And I don't think the judge recognized that in this order.
All right, gentlemen, we always enjoy picking your brains. Thank you so much for letting us do that today.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Shannon.
Good to
see you both. All right, up next, brand new Fox polls are out showing just which presidential candidate the voters trust more to handle the major issues now facing America. Our Sunday panel in the House joins us after the break.
Hey there, are you
Pope Francis led Easter Mass at the Vatican this morning, speaking to 30,000 people in St. Peter's Square, just 2.5 hours after a nighttime Easter vigil. The 87-year-old pontiff had been battling breathing issues and has appeared frail in recent months, but there he is today. In the United Kingdom, King Charles attended Easter service with Queen Camilla at St. George's Chapel at Windsor Castle. The king has been public about his ongoing battle with cancer. His daughter-in-law, Princess Kate, is also battling cancer, staying home with Prince William and their children this Easter weekend. It is time now for our Sunday group. Host of Fox News Media Buzz, Howard Kurtz. The Hill national political reporter, Julia Manchester. Former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State and former Hillary Clinton senior advisor, Philippe Reines. And Washington Post columnist and Fox News contributor, Mark Thiessen. Panel, welcome back to Friday. Okay, would you like to pronounce your name for us, since
it's
we always butcher
it? Reines.
Philippe. Listen, I had a maiden name that no one could spell or pronounce, so I was happy when I gave it. It was Dupuy. It's D-E, capital P-U-Y, if you know me. People say Deputy Dupree, whatever. So
I'm going to call him Philippe from now on.
I know. Philippe. That's what we're calling
you. Your name has been born.
I've been called worse.
That's true. Maybe even on this show.
Yeah.
Okay, we're glad you're here. Okay, so let's start with this. We've got brand new polling out this week. Head-to-head matchup. If you got to vote today, President Trump has a 5-point lead over President Biden. Markets early. Does that hold? What can it tell us this far out?
It's going to tighten. Obviously, every election tightens when it comes to Election Day. You've got Joe Biden is the most unpopular president in the history of presidential polling, going all the way back to Harry Truman. But he is just overtaken the man who is a previous record holder, which is Donald Trump, who is his opponent in this race. So you've got two candidates that a lot of Americans don't want to vote for. And so, you know, when that happens, anybody could win.
Well, President Obama put him down among those who is concerned, but a huge fundraiser lending his star power to President Biden this week. But the New York Times, quoting an aide, says Mr. Obama has always, that's the quote, been worried about a Biden loss. And so the aide added he is prepared to eke it out alongside his former vice president in an election that could come down to slim margins in a handful of states. How worried are Democrats?
We wish there was a bigger margin. I mean, this is tight as a tick. And as Mark said, this is going to get even tighter. President Obama is probably no different than the rest of us, that we wish the election were tomorrow, we wish we would win, and we could all, have a sigh of relief. But it is hard to say. And, you know, there are two people in the world that understand what it's like to run for re-election as Democrats, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. They are resources. They happen to also be friends of these men. They've known each other for decades. And I think that they have insights that can be shared and hopefully for the better. And I think Joe Biden wants them.
Well, there is worry on the GOP side of the ticket as well. AP reporting that just 6 months before the first early votes are cast in the general election between Trump and Biden, Trump's Republican Party has little general election infrastructure to speak of. The disparity with the Biden campaign is stark.
It's stark, and it comes at a time when you have the Biden campaign fundraising and having these really incredible fundraising numbers, to be honest, whereas in campaigning, going to swing states, whereas Donald Trump has essentially been stuck at the courthouse for the most part. Now, that works in a Republican primary, and it did work in a Republican primary. That really, I think, galvanized a lot of his support, even though he was still the front runner. But I'm curious to see how this plays in a general election. You know, I don't know if a lot of independent swing voters are looking at this and wanting to hear about Trump's legal issues. They want to hear about the kitchen table issues, the economy, the situation at the southern border, crime. Now, if Trump is able to do both, deal with his legal issues and campaign, maybe that's a different story. But this is all definitely, there's red flags on both sides. And I think this is Trump's red flag.
Well, so let's talk about the economy, because Howie, you're an expert at how people message and use optics and all of those things out there, their strategy. Axios says this: Biden and the Democrats have mostly ditched the word Bidenomics. Like, they've stopped using it. And you saw our poll earlier, better off than you were 5 years ago. Only one in five say that they were 4 years ago. And to independents, Julia, to your point, 86% of independents rate economic conditions negatively. So there will there be more of a messaging change on this Bidenomics issue?
Well, there better be, because it didn't work very well as a slogan. And, you know, if you look at people's anxiety, I mean, I could throw a bunch of statistics at you saying the economy is actually doing pretty well, low unemployment. But if people feel anxious, one of the reasons is because housing costs have soared. Mortgage rates are up. A lot of people in areas like Phoenix can't afford to buy a home. And so they are feeling very troubled about the future. Also, yes, it's great that Barack Obama and Bill Clinton helped President Biden raise $25 million. That's a lot of money. But two things on that. One is they made a huge blunder because they didn't provide any sound for TV. There was no sound of Obama.
I would have loved more of that. Yeah.
There was no. You have 2 minutes where you actually hear from Obama. You actually hear from Clinton. Mm-hmm. They do it at the White House with these pool parties. Secondly, yes. Huge economic advantage, financial advantage, I should say, for the president. But, I'm reminded of 2016 when Hillary Clinton outspent Donald Trump by like 10 to 1, and he still won. It's about the message, and everybody knows these two candidates. I don't think there's many minds left to be changed.
Well, but here's the question. Our polling also looked at this week whether that third party spoiler is a difference for them, because we did polling that included RFK Jr., Cornel West, Jill Stein. Of course, he picked his VP this week. Kennedy did. In that polling, Trump's still up by 5 points. So Politico asked the question. People agree RFK Jr. is a spoiler, but they don't agree on whose campaign his candidacy is spoiling.
Yeah, I think this is an excuse the Democrats are using for why they might lose. They're only going to lose because there's a third-party candidate involved. Look, the reason Joe Biden is losing, the reason why, if we held an election today, Donald Trump would be elected president, is because, if you want to understand it, it's one statistic. Over the 3 years of Joe Biden's presidency, Americans have gone from the highest levels of personal savings to the highest levels of personal debt ever recorded in American history. When Joe Biden became president, they had $1.7 trillion in personal savings. They now have the highest levels of personal debt. Credit card debt has just gone over $1 trillion for the first time. They went from having their bank accounts flush to maxing out their credit cards. And oh, by the way, interest rates are so high that they can't get behind they can't pay off their credit cards. And they're paying, 30% interest on these things. This is why they rate the economy so poorly, is because they're stuck in this debt.
Something tells me Philippe is going to have something to say about that during the commercial and after this break. Because coming up next, a brand new caravan of thousands of migrants is reportedly making its way through Mexico, heading to El Paso, as brand new polling shows growing trouble for the president on that issue, immigration and border security.
With Schwab Investing.
A migrant caravan, 2,000 strong, moving north through Mexico to the U.S. southern border, reportedly on its way to El Paso, Texas. We are back now with a panel. Howie, when you talk about optics and messaging, this is not another headache the White House wants to deal with.
Yeah, but it's not dealing with it well. I mean, this has been a disaster for 3 years under the Biden administration. You remember a few weeks ago there was a leak from the White House saying President Biden was considering taking some executive action, some unspecified executive action, against the porous border. But he never followed up. I don't understand. He's got the power of the presidency. Mm-hmm. Even if it got tied up in the courts, he could at least show that he's doing something. It's something an incumbent can do that a challenger cannot do. And if not just a Republican issue or a conservative issue, many big city mayors, as you know, Democrats, New York, Chicago, also very worried about this. And I think it is probably the biggest single vulnerability other than his age, that the president faces.
I get the sense from the White House that they feel like executive action by the president would take pressure off Congress in some way, and I think that they want to hold it back so that they can get some deal there. But
yeah.
I don't know that any of us think that deal is going to happen. Okay, so a little bit more polling, because I know Philippe wants to talk about this. Who would do a better job in immigration or polling this week? Now, I got to tell you, 4 years ago in the midst of the presidential election, Biden had an 8-point advantage. It is now an 18-point advantage for Trump.
I think that's a reflection on the incumbent, and whatever name was in office now would be the one that's being criticized. Because, look, there are three things on immigration. One, it's horrible. It's broken. It's untenable. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. Democrats shouldn't pretend otherwise. And I don't think the White House or the president does. Two, there's plenty of blame to go around. You said 3 years. This has been going on for 25 years in terms of 12 years of Republicans, 12 years
but
of...
But it's far worse
sorry.
Now.
Hold on. All right. I'm outnumbered. This isn't outnumbered.
That's a different show.
I know. And, that it wasn't fixed the day that Donald Trump took office. It wasn't broken, didn't break on the day Joe Biden did. Third is where I'm going to get partisan, and you can really jump on me.
I'm ready.
One party decided only in February, not even 2 months ago, to vote down the most comprehensive immigration reform in years. That would have put more people on the border, more law enforcement, more agents, more judges. And the Republican House said no. They wouldn't vote yes because they want it as a political cudgel, exactly for the numbers you're saying.
Well, they did also have objections to the substance of the bill
It's called compromise. The law would have given the president the authority to close the border.
He has that authority now.
Trump versus Hawaii ruled that the president has unlimited authority to keep out any aliens that he wants to keep out. Joe Biden has the same laws on the books that Donald Trump and Barack Obama had when Barack Obama was the deporter in chief who sent all the illegal immigrants home and got the left angry. He's broken the record for border encounters every single year for 3 years running. This is a Biden problem. And I'll tell you, Philippe, I don't understand, maybe you can explain to me, is you guys know, personally, because you were with Hillary Clinton in 2016, that Donald Trump rode the issue of illegal immigration to the White House in 2016. Why would the Democrats, having seen that happen, when they take back the White House, turn around and unleash the worst border crisis in American history? And think that that's not going to help Donald Trump win the presidency back?
Well, I think, listen to what you just said. There is no reason why they would do that unless they are not of sound mind and body. Which shows you how wicked of a problem it is that you can't just snap your fingers and fix this.
Okay.
You do need added authorities.
I want to make sure that we get to this other issue that has been bubbling out there the last 48 hours. The White House is recognizing today the president as Transgender Day of Visibility. It happens every March 31st, but it falls on Easter this year. That proclamation was issued on Good Friday, and there are a lot of people upset about that, including Caitlyn Jenner, who puts this on X. I'm absolutely disgusted that Joe Biden has declared the most holy of holy days, a self-proclaimed devout Catholic. As Transgender Day of Visibility, the only thing you should be declaring on this day is he is risen. Well, now we have a statement out this morning from the White House on Easter. The president saying, Jill and I send our warmest wishes to Christians around the world celebrating Easter Sunday. Easter reminds us of the power of hope and the promise of Christ's resurrection. Julia, it goes on from there. This has gotten a lot of attention.
It's gotten a lot of attention. I think we were talking about this before. The timing of this, with this falling on Easter, obviously a very religious holiday, definitely gives, I think, religious conservatives, definitely some material to work with going after the president on this. But at the same time, I think you're seeing the president walk this very fine line of wanting to, obviously, acknowledge Easter, but at the same time, there's a lot of people, particularly on the left, his Democratic base, who feel strongly about recognizing the transgender community, Transgender Day of Visibility. And if he were not to recognize this, that could lead to
that the President Biden is a Catholic church-going man, and the idea that he would desecrate Easter is the Trump campaign is charging. He has no control of it. It has always been March 31st. Now, could they have skipped the proclamation? Would that have been better politics? Probably. But I think to some extent, a lot of the coverage is leaving out the fact that he doesn't control the holiday.
Karine Jean-Pierre's Twitter feed this morning, nothing about Easter, but on Transgender Day of Visibility, the Biden-Harris administration honors the extraordinary courage and contributions of transgender Americans. Look, Joe Biden is a Catholic president. He's also the president who just sent his vice president to be the first vice president in history to visit an abortion clinic. You know, the Democrat position used to be that abortions should be safe, legal, and rare. It was a necessary evil. Now that this is a Catholic president whose administration celebrates abortion. So it's in the context of these anti-Christian policies that why people are so angry.
It's hard
about
to
this.
See how selling Bibles is celebrating Christian values. And it's not Joe Biden that I'm taking a shot
at. All right. All right, panel, I think that's a good place to leave. For now. All right, up next, a best-selling novelist headed to the big screen, a movie years in the making that happens to parallel the very current debate over unused IVF embryos. Karen Kingsbury joins us next.
I brought in Ensure Max Protein with the...
Karen Kingsbury is one of the most successful storytellers in the country. More than 25 million copies of her books are in print, including multiple number one New York Times bestsellers. Now, she decided years ago to take one of them to the big screen, pouring her life savings into producing a film that hits theaters Tuesday and now happens to feel more timely and complex than ever. The debate over unused IVF embryos. I caught up with her to talk about the film adaptation of her book, Someone Like You, and its broader message of hope. It's this week's Sunday special. You're tackling this topic of a couple that has used IVF to help them get pregnant. They have their daughter. I won't give away too much of the movie, but to say the mother is sick, her body cannot take another pregnancy, but they don't want to destroy the embryo they have left. And that is something that is in the middle of a nationwide, if not worldwide, conversation right now. And you tackle that topic.
Yeah, you know, it's something I'd never seen in movies or books before. I was actually at a speaking event, and I ran into a woman with three kids. You know, were triplets. And she said, yeah, my little babies were all adopted from embryos. They were embryos. And I had no idea that that was a thing and that there's more than 500,000 embryos in deep cryopreservation on ice awaiting adoption today. And so that kind of was the beginning of this idea that, you know, science has raised questions that only God can answer. And it began this story in my heart that became a love story that was irresistible. Still one of my favorite stories I've ever told.
You've sold millions and millions of books, numerous number one New York Times bestsellers. Your fans are ardent. I've met many of them, and they love you, and they feel your heart as you pour into these stories. And that's led you to this place where you decided to take control of your story, because your stories have been made into TV shows. They've been made into movies. They've been very successful. But this time, your family decided you would self-fund, you would take control of this movie. It's one of the ways we've seen people getting very creative, going around the traditional Hollywood studio system. Why'd you do it, and how much of a risk does it feel like?
Well, I mean, financially, it was an entire risk. It was a total risk, and our financial planner said, you're crazy, like, get an investor or try to get a studio. But there was this issue of control where I wanted to tell the story the way I wanted to tell it.
London?
Sending ripples through all of time.
I wanted to cast it and find the locations. And the only way you can do that is if you pay for it. So, you know, we really weren't, no studio wanted to support it anyway. They just were like, oh, we're not going to take a risk on romance and that kind of thing. But, you know, once we made the decision, we were all in. And I truly feel like it was the greatest answer to prayer that God brought us the most talented crew and cast that we could possibly have. And we filmed it in Nashville. So, you know, it's just like it's truly a miracle.
And there are really difficult conversations and family dynamics, things that all of us can relate to in one way or another.
You know, I still have questions about all of it, right?
Why don't you ask me?
Maybe later. Promise.
All right, I'm going to hold you to it.
Okay.
What kind of conversations do you hope the movie will spark? What do you hope to accomplish with it?
I mean, I think I can sum it up with hope. You know, Easter Sunday is a day of hope, and this movie will bring that hope into the next week and the weeks that follow. I hope for months it'll stay in theaters. And I really believe that seeing a love story like someone like you on the big screen is going to be an experience for people, which is what we used to get in theaters. And when they come out of the theaters, even though they have a loss, even though something might be divided in their family, they might be ready to make that phone call, write the letter, or let it go and realize, hey, you know, if you could maybe turn your eyes upward, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, well, hope is something that we all need in abundant supply. Karen Kingsbury, the movie's out Tuesday. Thank you so much for joining us today. Good to have you.
Thank you, Shannon.
And thank all of you for joining us on this Easter Sunday. For those who celebrate, a blessed day to you. Have a great week. We'll see you back here next Fox News Sunday.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
Listen to Fox News Sunday ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.